Thank you, Kieran, for that rousing request for a Dhamma talk. I hope that I can measure up to what you've asked, how you've asked. I'm just planning on giving a bit of a short talk this evening. We've had a bit of a busy day. Gone to the Fry's for Biba Fry's 100th anniversary. And Dajin Sake is returning from the emergency room. He didn't have a, I don't want people to get too worried or worked up about it, but he had an infection in his finger after he had some stitches put in. So I just heard back that he's should be coming back any time now, or has already returned, might have gone up the hill. He's got some antibiotics. So one of the things that came up in the tea time discussion was just reading the quote about that's in our forest that's actually been written twice, and it's I don't remember the whole quote. So I actually live on the other side of the mountain, so I don't pass this tablet, this piece of wood that has been painted on. It's just Ajahn Chah talking about how we can understand the Dhamma through observing nature. And I think he goes as far to say that, you know, that's really all we need. We can learn everything from observing nature. And so we were talking about that in tea, like, what does that exactly mean? And also, you know, if we can observe things that are happening, just living close to the natural world, can we also do that in, you know, a city setting? And we talked about that a bit. And what also came to mind then for me was a theme on solitude and how there was a refrain that the Buddha says many times over and over again. And we hear it in our chants, and it's, you know, going and finding an empty hut or a foot of a tree, and, you know, not neglecting our solitude, not neglecting our alone time, and not neglecting our meditation, our and he also adds, you know, lest you regret this later in your life. And that there's a quote I also remember from that's brought up sometimes by a poet, which many of you might know, Rainer Marie Rilke, or Rilke, and in a bit of a quite a different thing, he is advising a friend, student of his, someone who's seeking him for advice on having a partner, having a romantic partner, marriage. And he has something that one might not come across, what he suggests to this student, that the most important thing that two people do for each other is guard each other's solitude. And I've really almost never heard that said or advised in a sort of worldly way as a expression to people who are together. And so it epitomizes what the Buddha is teaching about how important solitude is, and why even if we think about, you know, just outside of just the paradigm of being in a romantic relationship or a couple, we think about it just how we live with each other in community, or live with other people or friends, that That's just such a beautiful way of really encouraging each other on a spiritual path. How important it is for us to find times to be alone, to be with ourselves. And the another quote I remember hearing about solitude is another definition of solitude is non-impingement from another person's thoughts. So that would include, not kind of, reading somebody else's ideas about something or whatever, in terms of the solitude of one's own mind. So you're working with your own mental sort of afflictions or difficulties. And I appreciated that in terms of a monk telling me once, why would I want to be exposed to like somebody else's writings, like in terms he was talking about like fiction or something like that. It's just like the kind of delusional machinations of another person's mind. And so what this is really bringing up is how we utilize solitude is really, it's a real sense of aloneness that we can have with ourselves, but something that's actually quite beneficial. There's not of course loneliness can come up, but we see that as another state of dukkha or suffering, and also what's important about that is we see like, well, what is that need about? If I'm alone, that I might suffer from loneliness, needing another person to be around. So these are all very good reflections for us, especially. I think everyone in this room is on the spiritual path, is interested in spirituality, and I think it's something that's quite important to reflect upon. Why is solitude important for us? What is the importance it has for us? Idealistically, we might say, well, it just shouldn't matter, really, whether I'm around people or not, to follow the path, to be mindful. But I find that for myself, even as I was a child, I remember times and this came up today, of really needing to find time away from people, and especially just today, the extreme of that came up for me when we went to Bibha Phrai's 100th birthday. 100-year birthday, and just being in front, there was probably, I don't know how many people, a couple hundred people there, and we, I think we felt comfortable because we were in a group as monastics, but, we were a bit out of sorts in terms of a party, But the Phrais are such friendly people. They and their friends, their whole family. It's just such a very kind and warm and welcoming experience to be around them. But yet I identified in myself just this kind of discomfort. And I think for most people, I was thinking to a certain degree, like just around a group, or all of a sudden you're in front of a group, and the feeling of that. I was guessing for probably all humans, there's got to be some signal of discomfort. Somebody might be kind of become so habituated to it, a public speaker, someone who's very used to that kind of thing, being in front of even thousands and thousands of people. But even still, like, there's something very innate, something very natural about feeling like, wow, okay, there's this feeling of self or this selfhood and a large group and some sort of, not feeling self-assured or fight or flight response. And so I just chiming in with that, like how I think many have heard that when there's psychological tests around people talking about their fears, that the fear of public speaking is sometimes greater than the fear of dying. Although I'm not, I think probably most people who are filling that out are, you know, it's probably if you are actually going through the dying process, one might feel differently about that. But the point is like it's in juxtaposition to the solitude. It is in like this feeling of being in front of a group, and then all the more so then, or all the slightly less so in the groups that we're comfortable with. But then I think what I'm really trying to come to here is the value of solitude. Like, why is it valuable for us? What is the value of being alone? And for me, there's just a sense of any kind of human involvement usually has with it a fluttering of the heart. You know, when we are alone, we are able to distill what it is to be with ourselves, to be with our own experience. And even though it's possible to do that when we're with others, unless one is enlightened, I think it's a difficult thing to do. There is some sense of alertness or a sense of the other or whatever it might be, and so the you know there, I think one thing that we are you know we can do and what we can glean off of that quote from Rainer Maria Rilke was that sort of being each other's keepers is really encouraging each other towards that solitude, because we know that it has with it a distillation of the sort of difficulties or the confusion that we might experience just being sort of impinged on other people, even if it's those people that we love or we care for. And it's in those times of solitude that we really gain our greatest understanding, because there's a bareness to it, there's a nakedness to it of our being just with our own experience. There are ways to run away from that. Again, like we can, another thing that came up in tea time was just talking about the distractions in life so much, just the screens that we use. And how important it is to get, again, like there's that sort of, you might not be with another person, but you're impinged by another person's thoughts. And so we really do need a break for that to understand our, to have a higher understanding of our spiritual life. One of the problems that can occur with this is that there can be a slight or even very gross, kind of large addiction to otherness, to others, to being around people. And it's in that where that I think that loneliness comes from. And so just like anything else we work with, we're trying to work with that sense of a need to be around others and to really try to balance that. So in the monastery, for example, I was thinking about how it's just very typical for us to spend time with each other in the mornings. That's sort of what we do, or a lot of us are together from 5 a.m. Meditating together in a group, and then we're together all the way till noon. So that's, you know, a good chunk of time. And then we take a break, and we have a longer break, and that's our natural rhythm in the monastery. The other rhythms can be when we have much longer breaks. We'll take a retreat, a couple week retreat, or a month retreat, or during the winter retreat, we will practice with each other at times, and then other times have vast periods of just solitude, being on our own. And so part of the process of being a monastic here is really learning how to be alone, learning how to spend time and see that as a benefit. And I think for for most of us, anybody who's tried meditation at least a few times, and just that there is eventually a sense of settling that can occur, a sense of, oh, okay, this does have a benefit. Even though it's difficult, then as Ajahn Sudhira was talking about last night, we eventually see the benefit of peace, the enjoyment of peace, and then we begin to say, like, okay, there's a value to being alone, there's a value to this practice. I don't have to be agitating, I'm making a choice actually to agitate my mind. And as much as we can rise up and sort of decrease, as I was mentioning, that addiction to the world, that addiction to screens, addiction to other people. And that sense of, for some people, like, you know, dealing with the fear of being alone. I remember when I was a lot younger, you know, just kind of, and before becoming a monk, there was some anxiety around, like, if I didn't have a partner, then what was I doing on a Friday night or Saturday night? You know, and the last thing that I could value as being good was being alone. That was sort of a dread for me. And it actually, if it occurred, then it felt like something was wrong. And that's very sad to me to think about that, because I think the opposite now. The opposite's true. It's like, yes, I'm alone. And there's something, yeah, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but just like, I would guess, I mean, I haven't talked too much to the other monks about this, but just like taking the steps, going up to our cabins, our huts, and then finally when we get there, there's just this relief, you know, this sort of sense of, ah, there's solitude, there's, this is a place for me to just be with my own mind. And then there is a needing to rise up to that and say, okay, well, how can I do that skillfully? How can I not waste this time? Just want to also mention that there can be a danger with that as well, that we can sometimes see that solitude all the time is what's most important. It's the thing that we should have as much as possible, and in fact we should just get away from people. And that's an unfortunate attitude to take, because our solitary time is informing us, but we also have to take that experience that we have. And with Ajahn Chah's teaching, he really encouraged having some time with others. So as much as I'm praising solitude and saying how much it's needed, I'm also saying it's needed to a degree. And there's very few people who have the ability to live in a cave for, you know, 20 or 30 years and just have no human contact and have that be a benefit. There can be an ideal around that, like that there's some sort of yogi living in a cave, or very austere Buddhist monk or nun who has lived in a cave alone. And you know, okay, well, if there are those who have done it and they've benefited from it, then there you go. But the reality is, a lot of us also learn when we are with other people. For me to recognize what I did, what I was experiencing when I was at Biba Fry's birthday party, just my own kind of sense of being around a large group or being in front of a large group, and the internal feeling of that's informing me, and it's also showing me how valuable solitude is when I can have it, but also how do I maintain equanimity when I am around others. How do I maintain, in a sense, my own solitude when I'm around people, and not in a way that is antisocial or against being around other people, but is informed by that time alone, that time to be able to reflect on my own experience. And so I think it's just important to try to recollect for ourselves how we experience solitude and how that's a value for us, how that can be something that we can kind of work with in our own reflection. Because if we don't work with that reflection and try to understand it, then it's similar to how Ajahn Sudhir was talking about last night. It's like not seeing the pleasantness that comes with peace, not seeing the pleasure that comes with meditation. And so likewise, we can't, if we don't reflect on this and see a benefit, then or allow ourselves to see that, then we don't really have a motivation to try to seek solitude. And again, it's important to remember that solitude is not just being alone. It's also kind of like what it is that we're doing while we're alone, you know, in terms of distraction and not really turning our minds internally. Because it's possible to be alone, but you're not getting anything out of it because one's not inclining towards wholesome states or wholesome reflections or really paying attention, moving one's mind in the right direction. So I think my sense is that, you know, as monastics, we encourage each other towards this. It's very helpful to live in a monastery because it's sort of the mode of being here is that we do seek times of solitude, and there's nothing wrong with it, and we're happy for it. And most of us are, to a certain degree, even just when we go to do that, we're encouraging ourselves in that way. But it's also helpful for us to say, hey, you know, sounds like you could use a little more solitude. So this talk is also as a reminder to those that don't have necessarily the benefit of living in a monastery. There can be so many other draws just in the worldly life that are much more difficult. I mean, just things we don't have to deal with in a monastery. So that was what I was recalling, thinking about in terms of living in a city. And just the many distractions that can happen with life outside of a monastery, and how that pull can be very strong away from solitude, and away from reflection, away from peace. So it's important then to, you know, to even put in a little bit more effort. You know, in certain ways, it is much easier to live in a monastery for this result. But one who doesn't live, you know, doesn't live in a monastery, then that effort towards peace and solitude and reflection needs to be kind of almost a little more super strength, because the pulls can be so strong towards distraction and away from that aim. And because this is I said it'd be a short Dhamma talk, I'm going to let you discover how to do that yourselves. And just want to encourage people, again, towards this reflection on solitude and interest in it, and seeing how it can be such a great value in the spiritual life. Amen.